This is The Next Turn, the home of conversations about skiing, ski racing, and sport. I'm your host, Martin Wilson, and after a lifetime as an athlete and a coach, and with a continued love of skiing, I wanted to take a deep dive and have honest conversations with the sport's most successful athletes, coaches, and forward thinkers. So join me in my pursuit of better, to be better athletes, better coaches, better parents, and better fans. This week, a conversation with Travis Gagnon and Marie-Michelle Gagnon. Welcome back to The Next Turn. It's good to have you here. Thanks to all of you for listening, rating, reviewing, and subscribing wherever you find this podcast. It's making a huge impact, and we really appreciate it. Thank you as well to all of those who've taken the time and effort to share your thoughts of the day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com. We really appreciate that as well. And most thanks to Jeff and Kara for joining me yet again. Jeff, why don't you give us some hard facts on the first couple of Speed, Travis and Marie-Michelle?
Certainly, Martin. So this is maybe the World Cup's quintessential ski couple. Marie-Michelle hails from Saint-Etienne, Quebec, and did her skiing as a youngster at Mount St. Anne. She just celebrated her 32nd birthday, by the way, on April 25th, so happy belated. She made her World Cup debut in 2008, has five World Cup podiums, two wins in the Super Combined, and a third in Garmisch this year in the Super G. The two of them have more than 400 World Cup starts. Travis Gagnon, 32-year-old from Truckee, California, 11 World Cup seasons, six podiums, two wins in the downhill in Santa Catarina, Italy, and one in Garmisch, and third in Lake Louise. The two now call Lake Tahoe home. Kara?
Yeah, like so many fans, I love these two without ever having met them. And it's not only because their last names are confusingly similar with their interchangeable G's and N's. What I'm looking forward to hearing the most in this interview is about their life together. So he's an American downhiller and she was a Canadian tech skier who made the switch to speed events recently. Now I want to know, was there some fear of missing out? Was she tired of always hearing about it at the dinner table about how awesome Super G and downhill are? Does she feel pressured to join the family business? Can't wait to hear this. I'm really looking forward to this.
That's awesome, Kara. I really enjoyed this conversation. These two are a smart and fun couple. And we got to go deep on a few subjects, their equipment, their prolonged successes, the highs and lows. But we started by having a laugh about their friendship with Feta Brignone and the infamous international text thread of the Speed Women. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. So here is Travis Gagnon and Marie-Michelle Gagnon on The Next Turn.
Federica is a really good friend of Marie and myself.
We've been good friends since
we've gone to like Costa Rica with her before and like gone to her house. Marie's gone to her house in Sardinia and gone to her house in Cormier.
Yeah. Wait, it's funny. Alice mentioned it and Feta mentioned it. Now there's this, I think it's the secret club you guys have of this text thread.
International Beaches.
Yeah. What do you call it?
International Beaches.
You can blurb that out.
No. We're going to use that. We're going to headline that. That's awesome.
And I'm a part of it, but since I'm dating her, I get to be like with that club a little bit from time to time.
No, he doesn't.
No, they're a fun group. It's a separate thread, Travis. Don't you think you're getting all the information?
No, but it's true. I've gotten to know them a lot more through
that. No, for sure. It's a good group with Ilka in there too and Kaisa Lee. And we have an awesome group.
That's so cool. What do you get out of that group? Like, what's the connection there and what does it bring you? Like, it's one thing to see each other the whole season, but I got to think that you're staying in contact the rest of the year as well.
Well, originally how it started is 2 years ago, we had a couple travels in like Bansko and Sochi and everyone, the whole World Cup was staying together. And most of us were single teams. So Alice was actually the only remaining American that was not injured. I was the only one from Canada that was not injured. I mean, of a group of two from my team. Ilka Stuek is a lone wolf. And Fede Brignone, she kind of, I mean, her and I are best friends on the circuit since forever. So that was easy. And then Kaisa also was the only one left on her team. So it's kind of like we got together like this and we just got along really well. I think there's a lot of girls that are awesome on the circuit. And this is like how this brought us together in the first place. But our friendship grew and some of us have gone through injuries since then. Some of us have won overalls. Like it's been really cool to share all that together.
Yeah, there's no serious camaraderie. What's the male version of that, Travis? Is there, you got a serious text thread hidden there, in there somewhere?
I mean, it's not the same, I guess. I don't know. I think as a, in general, like all the men on all the different teams are really friendly when we're at a race. Like I've been to a lot of women's races and a lot of the teams are really separate. There's a couple girls here and there.
This is a tech race.
Yeah, tech race. Yeah,
tech race.
A couple girls here and there that are kind of hanging out. But in general, on the men's tour, like, I don't know, there's less boundaries, I guess. And so everyone's kind of there and hanging out together and shooting the shit, whatever, just having a good time together, which is pretty fun. But as far as like, yeah, when we leave and go home for the winter, we don't stay. I mean, I'm not in a group like that stays in touch.
You don't have to be.
I'll invite you into one. We've got some pretty fun stuff going on.
But I think it's good also to have a little bit of separation from the tour for me, at least. Like when the season's over, all I want to do is like be away from those people and have my mind on something else, like focus on like friends and family back home that I don't get to see all winter and like, try to turn my brain off from race mode and just enjoy my off season. So it's like when you're always constantly surrounding yourself around the same people, you're in that really high competitive world all the time. And we're all very competitive. Like it's a pretty cutthroat environment. So it's nice to have a break from that from time to time.
What do you do to change the frequency that you ping at? When you're going, you talk about the high competitive nature and you're going and you come home mid-March. I always felt like at the end of the season, there's almost like the decompression it's almost like 2 weeks of depression and reset. How do you change the frequency, Travis?
I would say that since I'm dating Marie Michelle, like we have a lot of time in the season where I actually get to decompress as well, because we're both in Europe and we're close enough to like drive and see each other in between races. Mm-hmm. So I think like just those days, one or two days here and there where I get to leave the team environment and go back to like a different, totally different environment that's more like homey. It's really good to balance like that high stress of racing versus like real life. And so it's really unique to have that situation, obviously. And then at the end of the season, I actually am so excited to come home and just be able to do whatever I want. Like during the race season, I'm resting as much as I can, and I'm trying to stay ready for those one, two runs a day that are important. So I actually spend a lot of time just like sitting around resting, whereas I'm a super active person and I would want to be like ski touring and biking and checking out the local town and just like always doing something. And so when I'm over in Europe racing all winter, I do so much less than I want to do. So when I get home in the spring, all I want to do is go ski touring and ride bikes and see friends. And I'm really active, and I don't have that like downtime where I'm like kind of, oh, what's next? What do
you
I do
should
next?
Probably have a little bit more downtime as per my request, because I have to jump right from the season into all these activities. And I love it too. But it's, so now I'm able to more because I'm just a speed skier, but for years I was doing all the disciplines and it was a very heavy schedule. Like when he says he gets to decompress during the season, I used to not be able to do that because I was just like go racing all the time. And I get to the end of the season, I was just like dragging my feet up. Like it was really tiring. And now that I just do speed, I have more energy and I feel like it's like a mental break when we get home. We want to do other things, like get away from ski racing. But again, it's funny. My family makes fun of me and probably his too. It's like, so what do you do when you're not skiing? Well, I mean, we go skiing.
It's not ski racing.
It's totally different skiing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we go ski touring, we go skiing at the mountain, we go skiing with the family. And it's nonstop. Like we're on skis as much as possible while we can. Anyways, it's kind of funny in that sense.
It's also nice like living in Lake Tahoe too, because we go home and we have a million things to do. Like there's always something amazing to do. So it's hard to go home and just sit around and like have like a downtime, like down season. We have a whole new, like second winter starts when we go home and have like ski touring season. And,
yeah, recreation's right in your face there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why we love living there, so.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to live there? I can't believe I left there. I don't want to talk about it. It's stupid. You're both in Mammoth now. Marie Michelle, you've been there for a week or so with the U.S. team doing some speed training. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. And I had a nasty crash 3 days ago now.
Well, It's funny. I wanted to bring that up. Thank you for bringing it up because I didn't know how to do it. you took a tumble. I found it interesting. You posted some of it and you said you weren't allowed to watch the end of it. Is that a true story? You haven't seen it?
Yeah. My coach thinks that I would overthink and he'd rather me not see it. And like that, since I'm fine and nothing is too bad, like I'm definitely not 100% back to normal, but I'm just bruised up and stiff. So I'm okay. Mental like hurdle, I guess. Yeah.
The mental hurdle, right? That I want to get into that, but can you tell us a little bit more about what happened in the crash or a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. So this was like on the like fourth turn, coming in with quite a bit of speed, and I was like pretty confident and pushing really hard at that turn. But for some reason, it was in the transition between the hard snow and like needing to salt, because it was it's kind of like that spring snow mammoth can be amazing or it can be like on the transition. So the salt works really well. I'm not really sure. I mean, I kind of leaned in, which is definitely my fault. I was like preparing the turn and I was a little impatient. I was ready to push at the turn there because the next gate was pretty turny. And then all of a sudden, like my skis just went like this and like, and I for sure, most of it, my fault is from being far away from the skis and like trying to prep the turn and being a little too early in the turn. And then, yeah, I straddled the gate and like tumbled and went in the nets and landed on my bum. So my bum's like pretty bruised.
Literally got your ass kicked then.
Yeah.
During those training sessions, how many laps are you getting? How many training runs are you getting in a day? Is it a full length course? Mammoth is about a minute 10, minute 15, depending on where you're starting in there, somewhere like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So like now I haven't done like the full course since I've been back, so, but I think it's around 1:15. But yeah, we do usually about six runs, like full intensity, six runs. And then usually there, some people like Michaela will go and do some GS and then like we go and do drills, and depending on the people, everyone has a different schedule. But usually for that, those longer hills, it's been 5 to 6 for everybody.
How does it work when you train with the US ski team? Do you have a Canadian coach or a Alpine Canada coach that is with you that shows up for all of those, or you just sort of sneak in and drop your I'm pretty cool card? How does it work?
I came in with my team. Like obviously I couldn't do that, just join the US team. There's a lot of other girls lined up that would love to do that, right? No, I come in with my coach and there's consistency with my coaching. My coaches and I are working really great together. And then we have a new technician this year. So we just brought him over and started working with him and just kind of testing some of the tuning and some of the setups on the skis and things like that. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Travis, it was your first day on snow today.
Tomorrow morning's our first day. So everyone's arriving later tonight. And then tomorrow's our first day. First day of next season. Tomorrow.
It's crazy to think.
Off-season's over, yeah. No, it was like a 6-week off season. Yeah, 6 weeks or so.
I mean, after this, we have a long off season.
Well, no, but then after this, we have to go in the gym and work hard all summer. So it's not an off season at all. But anyways,
It's a different season. How much of this, the May camp is about equipment testing or just getting your legs underneath you, or is it primarily equipment?
So in the past, this camp was all about equipment. Getting the boots dialed, testing out some skis, and then we send all the feedback back to the Atomic Factory, and then they decide what kind of skis to build for next winter. So normally in the past, the spring camp was really important just to get everything dialed for next winter equipment-wise. Mm-hmm. But with COVID this year, the Atomic Factory is cutting back on some budgeting things because they had a tough winter selling skis. All the resorts in Europe were closed pretty much the whole winter, and so their ski sales really took a beating. So this year they didn't send over any of our factory servicemen and they didn't send over many skis. So this camp, we're going to go back to when we were younger skiers again and just do like back to the basics, drills, easy skiing, just kind of break it all back down and build it back up. So it's really good from time to time to do that and just kind of refocus on the foundation of what makes a good turn. Like the simple fact of like, how do you make a fast turn? And then you sit down with the coaches and the other athletes and you break it down and you figure out like, okay, what are we gonna work on today? Like, and you build it back up throughout the camp. So I only have 2 GS skis, 2 Super G skis, and we'll just kind of, I don't know, train a little bit, but mainly working on all these little fundamentals, which will be a great kind of foundation to build then into the summer training later. So
you just have carry-on luggage.
Yeah, pretty much compared to normal. Normally we're traveling with like, I don't know, 10, 15 pairs of downhill skis and 8 or 10 Super G skis. So,
and you drove down.
And I got to drive from home. I could have driven. I could have taken a lot of stuff this camp from.
Well, you brought a bike.
You brought a bike. You brought a paddleboard. You got.
Yeah.
It was not like.
I brought my touring skis. I brought my powder skis. I brought all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But anyways, that's the gist of this camp.
Can you humor me for a minute and let me nerd out a little bit and talk about what those basics and those fundamentals are? Like, what is on your agenda specifically to be working on in your skiing?
I think for me, it all comes from your foundation and like how you stand in your boots and on your skis in a neutral position. So for me, when I feel very balanced and comfortable with my connection from my boots to my bindings to my skis in like a neutral position, from there, I can do anything. So how do you break it down to get to that neutral, relaxed, balanced position? You try tons of different, everyone does drills, obviously. There's all sorts of drills that you can kind of mess with your balance and figure all these different, I don't know, positions out in difficult positions. And then you can buckle your boots tight again and get the good skis, get your boots back or your poles back and like push and feel the turn. This camp, we're going to actually go tele skiing. We're going to go telemark skiing for a couple of days just to kind of mess with our balance point and find that foundation. So the coach texted like, I don't know, 10 days ago asking what my tele boot size was. So I think after like training and doing drills, when the snow gets soft, we're going to go up on tele skis and try to replicate some of the similar movements in a different environment. So it's really challenging being on a different setup and dropping your knee and having to like feel these things with a different setup. And then you get back onto your race skis and everything feels so much better. And that foundation is there. And then from there, you can go on and focus on all these little kind of minute details to ski fast. But the ultimate thing is having that nice balanced position, neutral stance, athletic position on your skis that you can build from and push from. And then when you go into the season and race like Kitzbühel and these gnarly courses, if you have a solid feeling and a foundation, you can do anything. So
skiing Kitzbühel probably feels like you're skiing on telemark skis at times. That's
I mean, it does if your equipment's not dialed. Yeah. But if, but if you take the time to make sure everything's, all your ducks are in a row, it's really fun. It's not that hard.
I want to even go deeper if I may. Talk to me about the boots and what happens with your, is it cuff alignment? Is it, what do you really play with and how stiff is your boot and how much do you try to move in your boot? Like what's the ankle doing? Like I'm really nerding out here. Forgive me, but like what's going on in there?
Yeah. I mean, so I always have as much ankle flexion as possible, because if your ankle is in that ready position, no matter if you're in a low tuck or you're in a crazy angulated turn, you can adjust and you can do anything and you don't lose the power. And so even at the end of the turn, like a lot of people go vertical and lose the little bit of ankle flexion, but I always try to keep it super, super cocked and ready to go, even leaving the turn. So that just allows me, when I'm racing downhill going super fast, when I have to make little minute adjustments, it's just always there and I know it's there, so I can play with the skis. Mm-hmm. So when I set up my boots, I mean, they're very stiff, but I also put a lot of spoilers in the back. So I have that flexion all the time. And I do a huge heel pocket. I grind out a huge heel pocket. So my heel is just locked in the back. Plus that little extra ankle flexion, it just leaves my heel and my ankle in the perfect position to always be in that optimal place to do whatever I want. And then the rest of my foot's kind of free and moves a little more, but having that like feeling, and it's a feeling thing. Like I have five boots that are built the exact same way. And one of them works really well for some reason and the other four don't. So it's like a matter of trying all the different boots. And for some reason, one is what the fit on one is a little bit better than the other, or the plastic flexes a little bit better, or it's a lot of trial and error. It's definitely not rocket science. I mean, over the years, I've figured out kind of what
seems
my,
like it
what
is
my,
for you.
Well, I figured out what my canting is. I figured out what my canting is, and I figured out kind of the risers and the footbeds and all that stuff. So all that stuff's always the same. But then figuring out which boot I'm gonna like feel comfortable racing in, it's more of it's not rocket science. It's more of just kind of trial and error and figuring out
what feels Princess good. In the pea.
Yeah, exactly. What if the shoe fits, then it'll work, you know? It's
I feel like when we release this, I may have to put like a warning label on there. It's like, you're a speed skier. Please don't put shims in the back of your boot tech skiers, right?
Well, it's all individual. I think some want like a more like upright position so that they can move more. But I like having that little less movement so you can always have the tip is always engaged and always like tracking, I guess.
Yeah. How far off are your beliefs on the boot there, Marie Michelle?
I mean, quite different from Travis, actually, in the sense, well, I was struggling for the last years before I switched now to head with having that ankle flexion. And I remember he came to Garmisch and he's like, yeah, you're just like not getting ankle flexion. I was trying everything I could. I was like, I don't know what's going on. So he had me put the spoil in the back and I was like, oh, this is like really helpful. And I remember that like before I got injured, because I got injured in like 3 years ago in Michaelis, maybe four now. Previously, I had a spoiler and I just came back and like didn't put it in because I don't know, just didn't think of it. Anyways, so that I put the spoiler in the back, that's really helpful for me because it puts me in that forward position with the ankle already. And that's in GS and speed for everything. I'm less picky with boots. Like usually if I get a new pair of boots, I like having new plastic if it's going to be warm outside like it is right now. So it's not like, oh, like this boot for some reason doesn't feel good. I've always kind of felt like if it's a new boot, it's more about like the stiffness of the plastic for me and the angles. So I need a not very aggressive boot because when I was younger, I broke my left leg. And so I'm like slightly more bow-legged on my left leg, which makes it naturally more aggressive already. So we figured out that like for me to be aligned equal on both sides, kind of like almost like the left boot, I have to be a little in a way, like not like I'm flat 0-0 at the bottom, but like we move the cuff kind of towards the inside to make it less aggressive on that side. And then we make it so that like it's equal on both sides. And then we can play with 0.5 if it's like angles at the top, if it's going to be an icy slope like Bansko or like something steeper. But typically on the women's tour, I'm finding out now with a little more experience on the women's tour and speed, it's not like steep for many gates. And it's not like it's usually lets off pretty quickly. And it's definitely more about like speed elements that makes you fast, like a lot of gliding and not huge jumps or not huge turns like the men, I guess, in a way. Yeah.
I think both of us are nerding out on our boot setup. I think it goes to show that like, Once you've done this for as long as we have, we've been racing World Cup for what, 10 years plus now?
13 or
yeah, I don't know, for a long time. Like your boot setup is the number one thing. It's the most important thing. Like if something's off with your boots, you could have the best, fastest skis in the world and you could have like an amazing run and you'll be slow. So like we've learned throughout our whole careers that like the foundation of how your body reacts in your boot, and then that connection to your ski is like the most important thing. The boots have to be.
Yeah. It's everything. But
there's also like the skis, because for me, like I coming from a tech background, I thought, okay, like there's can't be that big of a the difference between skis. Right. And this summer I was like doing this course in Zermatt and I was quite flat at the top and have like one ski that was fast and one ski that was kind of slower. And it was like 8/10 on the flat, like difference from my own skiing. And that blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, this is like, this year I finally was like a full-time speed skier. I kind of put GS aside and then I really focused on it. And we did like ski testing and we knew which skis were fast. So this year I felt like I had the most knowledge for me about skis. So they can make a huge difference too, like the base of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's talking a lot about boots, but skis to me this year was like a revelation that I can't believe I haven't done ski testing before, but I also wasn't a speed skier like full time before. So
don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And as always, share your thoughts of the day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thenextturnpodcast. Now back to our conversation with Canadian speed skier Marie-Michelle Gagnon and American downhiller Travis Ganong on The Next Turn.
How much do you use each other as a sounding board for these types of things, whether it's
I think as far as like equipment goes, we rely more on like our ski technicians and our coaches and like the factories, like the head factory and the atomic factory. But as far as like technical and tactical skiing and like advice for downhill and the mental side, it's unbelievable having this relationship because we can like literally tell each other anything and we trust each other.
Yeah, except that like you can't really become the coach because it's like
you have to still
be careful. Boyfriend girlfriend. Yeah. It's just like more support and like you have advice that like is a bit more knowledgeable than a normal person that would not be a skier, like not a ski racer. So it's kind of like it's a tricky situation. Like you know a lot, but you can't always say everything because the coach's jobs is that's their job and that's the people you put your full trust in.
Yeah, but I would say though, like collectively between the two of us, we've had what, almost 400 World Cup starts, and so like the experience from that, my coaches haven't raced that many World Cups, so I like talking to her a lot about the things I'm working on a daily basis, like during the season. It's a really good sounding board because I feel comfortable saying whatever I want, and I know that she's not going to bullshit me back. Like she'll be very honest with me.
Sometimes.
No, she is.
That's good. Like, well, you need a straight shooter. I find it fascinating. Both of you have found some really good success at Garmisch. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think there's few places that you overlap. And I think the more you go to a place, the more you can absorb. Garmisch has been kind to you, Travis, over the years. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden this year, Marie-Michelle, it was very kind to you. Yeah. Right.
To be honest, this was the last place that I thought I would do well at because last year, I think I was 50th in downhill, so far behind. It was like my setup was just not working. And like the Super G, I think I was 25th or something, like not anything great. And I was like, oh man, Garmisch, like I don't like Garmisch. Now I've like totally changed my view on it.
Was it the equipment that changed, or was it something you learned, or was it just all of a sudden the stars aligned?
Well, this year, Garmisch, the conditions were a little different than usual. Like it can be like an ice sheet, like the whole thing's so icy.
And dark and gnarly.
Yeah, and this year it was dark and whatever, but it was like kind of that spring snow, like refreeze snow, like because it was raining for like 3 days. No, they salted actually. So they salted the slope and it stayed really good. I think I started 29 when I had my podium. So the salt worked really well. And it was different conditions. And I was building all season to something good. Like I was good all summer and it kind of was like a good timing also, but the slope was quite different than other years. And maybe the experience in Garmisch with ice will be different now that I love Garmisch.
A lot of younger athletes will be listening to this. And a lot of parents will be listening to this. And I think sometimes we take snapshots of our career. I was really good at U16 and then I'm not good at U18. Right? When I look at your careers on the World Cup, I'm not even looking beyond that, right? So Marie-Michelle, you won your first race in 2014, right? You had some podiums and then there was a gap of like a year or two. And then like 2016 was a pretty good year, right? You had a couple good ones there and then it kind of goes away and then it comes like you got injured and come back. How do you keep that in perspective? Like how do you play long game with your career and not get caught up in the highs and lows? Like like 2012, it was like your first year and you got a third and a slalom, correct? Right? And your first year on the world.
Not quite the first year, but it was like maybe second year or something.
Yeah. So you must think, oh, cool. Now they're going to keep coming, right?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Okay. Well, so there's a lot of highs and lows, but mainly a lot of lows. Like, cause it's if you expect a lot from yourself, there's going to be tough times. And ultimately you do this because you love it. Like you love the chase, you love it. Like those moments when you're like pointing out the 2014, 2016, and now 5 years later, a podium again, those podiums are so valuable for me because I worked so hard and I was searching, soul searching, trying to figure out myself, like in like, okay, how do I get my racing self? And I also switched disciplines. So this is like, it's easy to say, yeah, there was a 5-year lull. I got injured and I switched disciplines, and I knew this was going to be a long-term venture in a way. I didn't think it would take me that long. Coming back from an injury into the speed disciplines was a lot harder mentally than I thought. I didn't have as much of the speed elements that I thought I had, like the experience, the mileage on the speed skis. I needed to get that. So yeah, those moments, like I just remember my first win and like my first podium. Those are so valuable. And how do you keep going? I mean, you just love the sport, and like there's not like in between podiums, there's a lot of great results too. I think you have to kind of adjust your expectations yearly. Like you expect, okay, yeah, based on how I'm feeling and how I'm skiing, I know I can ski in the top 10 every race and I can be a podium contender, but there's so many factors like your start number, the light, like this is what I'm finding out in speed. This year, there's a couple times I was like, I'm totally ready for a podium. Like I was on the podium, I was in the top 3 in the training runs and I was skiing fast and I had a great run, but then you get like bad light and then like the people ahead of you didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's just like it's a game. Like, I mean, not everyone gets to be like Michaela Schifrin and like get it all the time. Like it's, and even for her, like I'm sure she has very valuable moments. So yeah, that's how I see it, I guess. And I just like love sharing that lifestyle with Travis. Like we've both had a very similar career actually, which is kind of funny. Like mm-hmm. we have almost the same amount of podiums and wins, and he has a world champs medal more than I do, but you know, it's not over. So
you'll set all that score soon. It is pretty fascinating how almost parallel the careers have been, with some earlier success, some injuries, and then some comebacks. I think you both have something like 60 top 10s. Like that's an unreal amount of consistency at a high level that I think some people can overlook.
Top 10s are like very overlookable. Like imagine if we were 2 or 3 tenths of a second faster in all of those races, those would be podiums. Mm-hmm. That's how competitive it is.
On the men's side.
I think that's like another answer to that question you were asking earlier from Marie, is like, why are you so close to winning and then have some down years, and why are there droughts? How do you keep going? I think every single year and every single race, we train the same intensity, we work the same amount of days and like whatever. We push as hard as we can every single race, expecting to win. But there's so many good skiers, and every single one of those skiers is doing the exact same thing.
A race is won by hundreds of a second.
Yeah, there's so many variables in play. Like you could have a World Cup, a winning run, but there's like a gust of wind and you're seventh, or yeah. like, and nobody will remember that. And so like,
I remember that. I like that level of consistency.
When you zoom out and you see like, okay, like there's a win here, there's a podium here, win here, but there's all this time in between. Like the time in between, we're working just as hard and we're skiing just as well. It's just the stars didn't quite align to get that final step onto the podium. And yeah, top 10s are there, but.
Well, you don't always ski your best. Not every slope is going to be like your favorite tailored to you in a way. Like for mm-hmm. me, I know as a tech skier, if it was really steep, like I was like, oh my God. Like, or really icy, because it's just like, I was better at like medium terrain and like kind of flatter. Like that was like my strength. Like I was shining on those races. So there's like a couple venues where I knew, okay, now I have, like this really suits me, and I'm sure for you too. Like Vangen, for example, he officially won Vangen, but he won it in Garmisch, which is kind of funny because it was the makeup. But normally Vangen, it's not your favorite. So, but like there's other places, Garmisch, you go there and you're like, oh yeah, like this is my place. So it's also a little bit of that.
When you go and learn a track, Travis, how do you, what is your process to learning a track, and to what Marie-Michelle is saying, how do you, one, identify, I'm going to like this or I'm not going to like this? And then two, how do you take it to, I'm going to learn how to like it? What is the process over the years going to these tracks and learning something?
Yeah, well, I think that's a huge part of being a World Cup downhill super G skier, is learning the tracks. And when I first made the team, the mentality on the US team was, okay, you're a rookie, we're going to give you a shot at the World Cup and you have to win day one. And so a lot of guys would show up and ski 110% on a brand new hill that they didn't know and get hurt. And so when I first made the team, that was the mentality that I was pushed into. And, but I had a totally different outlook on skiing. I was much more methodical and like,
you still are.
And so I still am. But the way I approached downhill was a little different. Whereas like the first training round, I would go 80%, 70% and just check it out and learn the track and kind of figure out like where I can push, where I need to hold back, what sections suit my style, what sections are maybe not in my wheelhouse. Second training round, I would ramp it up a little bit more, but by race day, I would only still be skiing at like 90%, 95%. I would never kind of push myself to like race pace, you know. I would always be holding back a little bit. And so my first year, I did that. I had a couple top 30 results. I think I ended the season ranked top 30, like pretty decent, but I wasn't winning races. But I gained so much experience from all these tracks. And I started to learn, okay, I can push here. I need to hold back here. This jump is really dangerous. So like, don't try to win the race here. Just make your way through it. Like all these things are so valuable. You can't learn this unless you just do it yourself. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, skied at 80 to 90% that year on the World Cup Tour, gained all this experience. The next year I came back, and my 80 to 90% was like 100, 110% from the year before. So, and I stayed healthy. So 2, 3, 4 years into racing World Cup, all of a sudden I was skiing at a really high level, but it was still well within my comfort zone. It was like 80, 90% still. And I started winning races. I think the important thing to take away is that like, you need to take the time to learn the tracks, and you need to identify sections that suit your strengths and other sections that are maybe not suiting your strengths. And the whole run, you can take some sections and go 100%. Maybe other sections you got to go to like 80, 70, 60% and make your way through. And you don't have to win, especially in downhill. Like you don't have to try to win your first training run or your second training run or your first race or your second race. If you take the time to learn the tracks and to get comfortable with the speed and the timing and then build, you're going to be in a way better place down the road. So I think in GS and slalom, it's a little different because it's a little less risky. So you can kind of push harder.
Yeah.
But
you have to
push harder.
Marie Michelle, your transition from a tech skier, your early success was in slalom. And your transition in from a slalom skier to a speed skier, how different is that? And how similar is the process for you? I want to be careful how I say this, later stages in your career moving to speed as opposed to coming on as a speed skier. How different is your process learning these tracks and absorbing information? Are you better at it now, or do you wish that, God, I wish I started as a speed skier and I'd be further ahead now?
First of all, I think you're asking me like, how different does it feel between tech and speed? And to me, it felt like I quit skiing and then I started a new sport. Like that's how much different it is in a way. Like it's all like the same basics, but it's so different. Like, and that's what makes it that I'm like 32 years old and I still love it. And I'm so excited and I'm very passionate about what I do. If I was still a slalom skier, I think I wouldn't be racing anymore. But anyways, moving on from that, I'm happy that I've taken up speed later in my career. Once I've gained some, because I was a very like attack, like all out skier. And I think that most likely could have been a ticking bomb as a speed skier. I was not as well on top of my skis, not as like strong technically. So having that background, actually going into speed, yeah, it was tough in a way because it took me time with injury. And last year, like the Canadian team was almost going to cut the women's program. So I kind of had like a chip on my shoulder this year, like, okay, like this has to happen this year. But like, because I had that background, I made that progression. Once I decided that I was comfortable and I felt good, then I made that progression so quickly. I went from like 30th in the world to like 9th and podiuming and like being always in the top 10 every race. So it was like that transition was a lot quicker and safer in a way, I would say, than if I did this when I was younger. But you know, I'm not one to really be negative and be like, oh, I'm looking back and I should have changed something. I should have been a speed skier earlier on. But like when I was 18, I mentioned earlier, I broke my leg, and that's like, I was a speed skier previous to being a tech skier on the World Cup. So I made the team based on my Super G results. We actually won our, our NORAM at the same day.
Our first NORAM
at Apex. Before we were dating. Yeah. But that kind of was like how we like got to know each other. And so then I went into tech after being injured and breaking my leg. And they said, yeah, it's so important to have a strong technical background. And later in your career, you can do this and you will do this. Mm-hmm. And I took the opportunity when when the Pyeongchang Olympics were in sight, I was a good medal contendant for the combined. So I always did combined, but I'd never really trained downhill. I just kind of went blind into it and like just used some of my skills, but like didn't really train it. But that summer I trained it and I was like, oh my God, this is what I need to do. I'm so excited. And then I got injured. But then at least I knew that was the direction that I need to go in and back into speed and make that transition to.
Yep.
Yeah, and now it's
plus training speed days are so much more fun than training tech.
Oh, so fun!
Being a downhill super G skier is way more fun.
Like I talked to my teammates, and they love slalom and they love like the intricacies. So everyone's different.
No, I don't. I'm with Travis on that. Like, come on.
I mean, I'm agreeing with you guys. I'm just not putting other people down because there's
I'm not putting them down. I'm just telling.
I'm just saying it's really fun.
As always, thank you to our friends at 4951. Check them out at 4951.com for all your Liski, gait, safety, and training needs. And now back to our conversation with Mary Michelle and Travis on the next turn.
Normally, I'd want to take a look back and talk about your development, but you just because we're talking about learning the tracks and learning the new skills, I think it's really interesting that next year's Olympics, knock on wood, we pull them off, is going to be on a course that nobody's ever been on.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's this, like, Travis, you've talked about, you know, taking your time learning a course. Well, you're hopefully going to get two or three rips down it.
Yeah, before race run.
Before you go. What's your strategy? What do you think you have to adjust looking ahead? And I don't want to put the Olympics in a reasonable sort of frame where I think it's really tough to go next February 15th, I'm going to be at my peak, right? I don't think that's like necessarily reasonable to think that that's to plan on it being your best day, but you have to plan.
Yeah. I mean, you try to plan for that. There's all sorts of like things that go into trying to peak on that day. But I would say like the track, a brand new hill like that, because nobody's ever skied on it, it levels the playing field, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard this before. Like all the old veterans on the tour have never skied it. Mm-hmm. So their experience.
That's you now.
Their experience is out the window. They don't have an advantage. And all the young guys, everyone's at the same spot. So the tactics and definitely like the way you approach the venue is a little bit different, I think. I think like going into a venue that you've skied 6, 7, 8 times before, you're super relaxed and you just kind of go through the training rounds and go through the motions and you know what you need to do on race day. So it's like very relaxing on a brand new venue. You have to approach it completely different. Like the first inspection is super intense. You have to really take your time and I mean, you just have to be very focused for those days, make those days count, I guess. And it's a game. Who can do it the quickest and the fastest and who has the best video, who can figure out the hill. Mm-hmm. We work with the Norwegian team and they have this new GPS system that they've been letting us try out. And so we're getting all this new data and we're trying to figure out how we can use this data to help us figure out these new tracks really fast. So.
But I want to chime in for that because Travis has had a record of being very good when it's a new hill because he's such a like natural feel skier. Santa Catarina, his first win was a new track for like almost the whole field. And Sochi, like maybe people had been there a little bit, but not a whole lot. Yes, and you were shining on those hills.
Yeah, no, I definitely love skiing new tracks just because it's like, it's back to like more just like feeling the mountain and flowing down the hill and like free skiing. And I love free skiing and it just kind of fits into my style, I guess.
It helps to grow up at Squaw.
Definitely, yeah.
Because like once you have experience, then you can really push. But if you don't have that experience, you need to like use your natural flowy skills to like find speed, and that's his strength.
I call it reaction skiing. So like one of my favorite things to do is like in the spring is I go home and I ski KT and I go as fast as I can down like West Face or like alternate shoots.
I remember that.
Like through the moguls and around trees. And I'm not thinking about like where I'm going at all. I'm just literally reacting and like flowing down the hill. And in the summer when I was younger, I used to train. We used to run up riverbeds, dry riverbeds, yep, on rocks. And you're just reacting. You have no idea. You have to like plan ahead and be like, okay, this rock looks big enough. It's not going to move, but you don't really know. Yeah. And you're just kind of reacting and having that ability to like be quick on your feet and like, and I don't know. I think that plays in really well into like skiing a new track.
I love that. I like to ask athletes what makes them good. And we're kind of talking about it here, but Travis, I'm going to throw a curveball in here. When Marie Michelle is at her best, what does she do really well on her skis? What makes her good?
She finds the fall line and she's not like scared of the fall line. She takes so much speed just naturally. Like when I first met her, she maybe wasn't like technically the best skier, but she was so good at like finding speed and whereas a lot of other skiers are like really perfect and precise and maybe holding on a little too much and they look really good, but they're a little slow. So like, I think her big strength is knowing how to find fall line and taking the speed. Like it's something you can't really teach. Like it's easier to teach somebody how to turn and how to transition and how to like, mm-hmm, like tactically enter a turn and exit a turn. But like knowing how to just kind of link those sections all together and finding that speed, it's tricky.
This is true for tech and
but speed too, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But speed has been a little bit different in that sense. Like how to be fast and speed and not just find the fall line, because you could go just straight and not create speed, I think. Mm-hmm. So there, it's like, that was, I would agree with him that was my strength in tech, especially when I wasn't thinking, I was just like attacking and I'd be like kind of wild skier a little bit. And I'd get these results like early on. I think my first top 10 was like the first year I competed and I was like, oh my God, like this is crazy. And I look back at the video and I was like, that was not good skiing, but it was like, yeah, like you said, down the fall line.
Yeah. And I do think in speed, it does translate for you too. Like she's a better technical skier than a lot of the speed skiers on the tour, just because of her technical background. But she also knows how to like let the skis go. And a lot of tech skiers have a really hard time transitioning to speed because they don't know how to let the skis go.
Yeah.
And I think that with her, like from her growing up and being kind of loose on her skis, she knows how to find, it's just this like really minute little details of how to find speed.
I will get Travis's back. When I look at your run at Garmisch, the Super G, I was watching it before we got on here just to get me jazzed up. Marie Michelle, I love how Travis mentioned it, just loose on your skis. There was a certain flow,
yeah,
and a lack of resistance. You knew when to hammer and then when to chill. And it was really impressive to watch. What makes Travis good?
So Travis, like I said, he's a very natural skier. He's very balanced. You watch him in the speed race and you're just like, come on. I mean, everyone else looks so wild around, like everyone else was so on the edge, but he's like so balanced and just chilling. And he needs time to build. That's like what he said. But once he's confident and he's in balance on his skis, that's when the magic has happened for him. So he never is that skier that like, you're like, oh my God, like that was sketchy. Like the line, like usually you actually take even more of a like rounder line and you like, he pushes on the ski and like really is always on the ski, where some guys will like go straight and like da, 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 and then like it just looks a lot different. What else makes you good? I mean, you're just like you said, like he grew up in squaw, like going off cliffs and like just like when I go free skiing with him, I like following him because he's finding all the little terrain everywhere and he's like really good at terrain. Actually, that's probably one of your strengths.
Yeah,
terrain.
Yeah.
So those two things, like terrain and very natural balance skier.
Is that what you'd want to steal from him? Like his ability to deal with terrain?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely working on that. And that's something that was one of my weaknesses for a long time. So yeah, I would say that's one of the things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you stealing, Travis?
Maybe a little bit of the intensity. I love the feelings I get when I'm skiing. And so I just like really enjoy the feelings and I'm sometimes a little bit too relaxed maybe. So I think, and she's
that's also the squaw upbringing.
Yeah, totally. And she's in Quebec and she's very intense.
Way less so now.
Less now because she's been living in California for a bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, if I could like steal some of that intensity, I like the feelings I have on my skis is why I do it. And the racing part is like secondary. I don't really enjoy the racing part and the competition part of ski racing. I love skiing just because of the feelings I get and like the places I get to travel and like these courses that are prepped perfectly for me to like challenge myself and try to ski my best. But like the competition side is not my favorite. So I think if I could,
unless it's in your advantage.
Well, no, I think
and if you're winning, it's pretty damn fun to be competing.
One way or another, it's I just love the skiing part, I guess. Yeah. And then like the competition part comes second. If you do well or do bad, it doesn't matter. I think it's just and that's something I could maybe harness more to get more intensity to like push a little harder. I don't know. But I just love skiing. So
when you look at the next few years of your career, you know, I guess we've kind of been talking about it, but Marie-Michelle, do you think of where the next gains are? Like, where do you find the next 1 or 2% to get a little bit better here, a little bit better? Do you think about that? What do you have to do? What's that next 1-2% to get where you want to go? Where does that lie?
That's a good question. This year, I made a very important step in the sense that I improved my start position because I was in downhill between 20 and 30 and also on Super G actually, luckily, because I was ranked out of the 30 in Super G because I had a lot of DNFs last year, but some girls were injured or missing, like they were not there, retired or something. So it was lucky that I started in those numbers. But now I have a strong start number in both downhill and Super G, and that brings up my chance of performing well because I have the same, usually similar conditions to the top girls, right? So that's was number one. And I could see that, like, now that I've made that step halfway through the season, that's what made it then possible to be more consistent in the top 10. And I need to keep working technically. I do need to stay a little bit more close and aerodynamic with my upper body. I'm working hard on that. And those are like little things that I need to tweak and keep going with the technical side, improve on terrain. Those are kind of like my focuses. But like for me, it was consistency was really important with my equipment and my coach. And so then I can move forward with that work that we've been doing. Cause I had a new coach last year and new equipment. Those were all very positive changes, but it took a bit of time to get used to it and improve my start number.
That's awesome. Travis, same question for you. Where's that 1 or 2% lie?
I mean, it's probably in my start. if I could be better, like the first 5 seconds, I would have 5 seconds. Because at 5 seconds, everyone's pretty much up to speed. But like those first 5 seconds, I'm always losing 3-4 tenths of a second. And if I look back through my career, how many races I ended up 3 tenths of a second away from winning, and I was 4 tenths of a second out at the top, I like want to kill myself. It's frustrating. Like in Sochi at the Olympics, I was 4 tenths out of the start, 3 tenths out of the finish, and I was fifth. This year in Garmisch, same story. I would have been on the podium if I was a little bit faster out of the start. So I think it's something I've always worked on, and I just haven't quite.
You did well this year. You got better at it this year.
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm still giving up valuable time out of that start. That's just one really specific thing. Other than that, it's just all about me being balanced and comfortable on my skis and being healthy. And I think the sky's the limit. If I have all my ducks in a row and I'm feeling comfortable, I can push hard and I know where to push and I know where to hold back. And I kind of
figuring out your equipment.
I kind of know what sections suit my strengths and which ones are a little different. So I know where to push, and the experience combined with all those other things. I think, yeah, I mean, it's ski racing. There's such little amount of time that separates an amazing performance from like a top 10 performance. So it's like,
I start calling top 10s amazing.
Yeah. I mean, top 10s are amazing. And every time I get a top 10, I'm like super fired up.
Yeah. You get paid for top 10s, right?
Out of the top 10 and you come back in the top 10. It's so amazing because I remember like first being in the top 10 and be like, oh, like this is the new standard. And like being there for some years and then like falling out of there because there's new girls coming and like perhaps some equipment stuff or whatever it was that like wasn't aligned. And you're like, oh my God, it's so difficult to be in the top 10. It's really, there's always newcomers and it's constantly pushing. Like, it's not like once you've made it, you stay there.
Welcome back. Special thanks to Marie-Michelle and Travis for a terrific conversation. We really appreciate it. It's now time for our thoughts of the day. Kara, what you thinking? What are your thoughts of the day?
Well, great interview, Martin. These two really are the dream team. So they've been together for 13 years, and I love that Travis still says they're quote-unquote dating. I'm always interested in how international couples make it work. I met my Colorado husband on the Free Skiing World Tour, and we lived and traveled together all over the place. And there's a comfort in that. A lot of the athletes and even the coaches that we've spoken to on the Next Turn talk about how lonely life can be on the road. And while Marie-Michelle and Travis are not always in the same mountain town or even the same country, they talk about how they try to sneak away and see each other, which gives them a sort of a sense of a normal relationship, being grounded and having that valuable time away from the stress of the tour. And I think this is only going to be beneficial for a couple of world-class athletes. These two seem to have a lot of fun together as well, and they both clearly love skiing. As the kids say, I'm looking forward to shipping them from afar. And as you like to say, Martin, these two make it really easy to cheer for them. Jeff, what are your thoughts of the day?
Hey, Kara, just before I give you my thoughts of the day, when you first search Travis Ganong on social media or you put him in Google, the first thing that comes up is Travis Ganong's wife. And you click on that and there's a big picture of Mary Michelle. So I think it's a little bit more than dating. So anyway, I digress. My thoughts of the day, I'm going to go with the nerding out, as Martin called it in his interview. I love the fact that Travis is talking about a camp at Mammoth after this season where they're actually going to go telemark skiing. And the reason they're going to do it is to work on their balance and position, articulating the ankle and all of those things. They're still working on that at 32 years of age, which is incredible to me as a ski coach of, you know, younger athletes right now. So we're always talking about the boots being the most important thing. And Travis, you know, obviously talked about that a little bit in his interview with Martin. And I think it is something that we got to take away. And as, especially for our younger coaches out there and with parents of athletes, the boots got to be right. And the kids got to be able to feel their ankle, articulate your ankle and against the tip of the ski. And I think it's so important to always work on the feeling of skiing. And Travis talked about this in his description of reaction skiing. And he said, this thing that they used to do as kids is they go and run up a riverbed and all over rocks to figure out where their ankle was and where they needed to be and to be in a balanced position. So I thought that was a great analogy. And the last thing I'll say before I kick to Martin is I love the fact that it's the feeling he gets from skiing is why he loves it so much. Martin, what are your thoughts of the day?
I think both of you are spot on, and thank you for both of those. For me, I'm impressed with the level of consistency that we may be overlooking with these two. 60 top 10s for both of them in their careers. That's pretty incredible. We don't give enough credit for that, especially here in the United States. We've been spoiled over the years with the successes of Lindsay and Bodie and Michaela and so on. That level of consistency over the years is really quite remarkable. I think we may also be underappreciating the versatility and talent of Marie-Michelle. She made the Canadian team based on her speed rankings. She started the World Cup in tech with success, with World Cup podiums and combined wins. And then after an injury a few years ago, she switches to a full-time speed skier. And now at 32, she's finding her stride and still learning and still getting better. And she's becoming more and more confident each run. Jeff, I got to echo what you were saying about Travis. It really got me when he said, the feeling I get when I'm on my skis is why I do it. I'm here for that all day long. And finally, Kara, what you were saying, the value of their connection seems to be huge for both of them. Not everybody on the World Cup gets that level of support or understanding from someone that's that close to them. And it sure helps these two. I can't wait to see what these two are able to do in the future over the next few seasons. Bon chance to both of them. So thanks very much to Marie, Michelle, and Travis for their time and candor. Thank you, Jeff and Kara, for your thoughts of the day as always. And we hope to have you back here soon on the Next Turn. Be well.